Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
An Erio's original.
I'm Leslie Arfin, and this is my show, Filling the Void, a show where I get to know my friends better by talking to them about the things that bring them pure joy, also known as their hobbies. Today, our guest is one of my oldest friends, Bobby. Bobby is a professor of psychology, and he is just one of the funniest, smartest, best dudes in the whole wide world. Today, he's talking about his hobby, Agatha Christie. Agatha Christie novels, not necessarily her, but her books. So whether or not you've read Agatha Christie or like Agatha Christie, I've only read like one or two of her books, and I love this episode. Bobby, can I call you Boopsie? I guess not.
I'd love it.
Now, I know you're a man of many hobbies, but today, What are we going to talk about?
We're going to talk about Agatha Christie. Is that a hobby?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Especially because of how deep you're into Agatha Christie. Correct me if I'm wrong, which I probably am.
Uh-huh.
You're writing a paper about how Agatha Christie was the pioneer of criminal profiling, so that you can go to a convention in the UK for free and go to an Agatha Christie convention at the same time.
That's my hope. I'm trying to...
Gangster.
There's a international Agatha Christie conference, and it's like half... they do like murder mystery parties. And I think there's also an opportunity to go like roller skating on the English like Riviera.
Wait, would you roller skate?
Of course.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Absolutely. I would absolutely roller skate.
Would you do the murder mystery? You would do that.
I would do all of that.
Yeah.
I want to do all of that. But then it's also half like academic papers on Agatha Christie. And there's a ton. There's so much academic deconstructing of Agatha Christie.
Really?
So much.
Why?
Well, I think there's a lot of academic deconstructing of everything.
Right.
Like, you know, like it's...
That's like what you guys have to do.
Well, it's not what I do. This is definitely like a pretty significant leap from what I normally do. Nothing I do at work is really related to like any interest that I have outside of work, you know?
Right.
So this would be like the first time I'm writing something for the sole purpose of like it connecting with a hobby or something I'm interested in.
So that's kind of fun. Have you started writing it already?
No, what I've started doing is I basically got PDFs of every Agatha Christie book, and I've just been doing like basically just like searching for examples of what I'm trying to get at, and then it's called like coding. I'm basically like coding for themes.
I love
related
that.
To like, yeah, related to like what my idea is.
Wait, like, I actually love that. I didn't know that that was called coding.
We call it like, it's qualitative research, where you kind of read through, you know, kind of endless amounts of information, and it's called coding for themes. So like if something comes up repeatedly, like over and over again, it's considered a theme. And then you try to kind of draw some theory from the themes. Again, this is not the most scientific way to do things. I'm kind of working backwards because I already kind of have my idea. And
right.
I'm really just like looking for examples to demonstrate my idea.
Totally.
Yeah.
Okay. So when I was like, I want to start reading Agatha Christie, you gave me a spreadsheet you had made. Will you describe the spreadsheet?
Yeah. There are, I think, like 65 or 66 Agatha Christie books that are mysteries. There are a couple of like thrillers thrown in, and mm-hmm. the thrillers generally aren't very good. And I've read, I think, like 59 of the 65 or something like that. I think I only have six left to read.
What's stopping you?
Honestly, just savoring
Totally.
Like not wanting to
thinking.
Run out.
Yeah.
I've really slowed down because you know how devastating it's going to be when I finish the last one. It's going to be so sad. So I've slowed down quite a bit. Also, it kind of sucks, but like I think with two exceptions, the other ones I have left, I'm pretty certain are really bad.
Really?
Because the thrillers are usually bad. And then the other thing that's really devastating, and this is true and this has been documented, is like she definitely had dementia at the end of her life.
Mm.
But she was such a prolific writer and such a successful writer that You can't stop her.
Yeah.
The last couple of books, by all accounts, are a complete mess because she was like literally like dealing with like dementia. So there's only a couple of books left that I haven't read that I'm excited to read.
Like which ones?
There's one called The Pale Horse that's supposed to be really good
uh-huh.
that I've never read. And then there's one, I think it's called At Bertram's Hotel. I think that's what it's called. I think that one's supposed to be decent. Oh, and Towards Zero. There's one called Towards Zero that I've never read. But
what got you into Agatha Christie in the first place?
I picked up Death on the Nile at like a used bookstore when I was a senior in high school, and I read it and I loved it. Yeah,
but like, I mean, you weren't going strong ever since then.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah,
a long time ago.
But I don't even remember you talking about that, and we've been friends for that long.
Yeah, pretty early on, I started like spreading them out,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I still do that. And then I also probably took like 5 or 10 year gaps from reading her, like where I would just like take a little bit of a break. And then usually when I start up again, I get all stoked again, and I read like a bunch in a row. Like to this day, what I normally do is I'll read like 2 or 3 like genre paperbacks, like Agatha Christie, because mm-hmm. they only take a few days.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'll read something substantial, and then I mix in some smaller, easier paperbacks.
Totally.
So that spreadsheet, I basically listed every book that she's written.
Yeah.
I divided them based on who the detective is, which is that. I mean, everybody who's like an Agatha Christie person does that, like who the detective is.
There's Miss Marple's. What's her name?
Miss Marbles. Miss Marple.
Miss Marbles. And Pierrot.
Yeah, Hercule Poirot. Yeah.
Poirot.
I don't do it the right way. I don't know. Poirot.
You have to get it right when you go to this convention.
He's Belgian.
What does Miss Marple look like?
Miss Marple looks like
Angela Lansbury.
Yes, a cross between Agatha Christie and
who looks like Angela Lansbury.
Yeah, all three of them are like they're a composite. Okay. Yeah. 100%.
Okay, so there's those two, and then...
They're the big ones.
Right.
There's Tommy and Tuppence, mm-hmm. who are a young married couple. I don't really like the Tommy and Tuppence books. They're more in the, like, adventure kind of category. And then there are a couple. There's, like, Colonel Race and Lieutenant Battle, but they only show up in a couple of books.
I see.
So other than, like, Poirot and Marple, the important ones to know are, like, what I call... Again, I'm sure other people call them this too. I didn't coin the term, but like the standalones, so
right.
books that aren't like that are don't have like a major character. She generally like alternated more or less between like a regular detective and then a like a standalone book. She would like kind of mix
right.
them up.
Right. So, what is your favorite of the Miss Marbles? Miss Marple.
My favorite Marple books. Or I would say A Murder Is Announced is great. It's mm-hmm. a really fun one, like mm-hmm. good puzzle mystery. It's pretty light, good twist. And I love Pocket Full of Rye too, which is a Miss Marple. Has
I like
one
that
of the
title.
More yeah. I mean she kind of overdid the nursery rhyme titles. Like Pocket Full of Rye has nothing to do with that. Pocket Full of Rye is good. It has a good the ending's awesome. Like
okay.
a good, like a little stab at the end of the book. That's really,
I love it.
Yeah.
And then, what is your favorite Poirot?
Oh,
why can't I say it? Poirot.
So, Death on the Nile is great. I love Death on the Nile. That's the first one that I read.
That's what I read, right?
Oh, you no. Murder of Roger Ackroyd.
Yeah.
Five Little Pigs is really good.
Mm-hmm.
Also a nursery rhyme title. Lord Edgware Dies is a really good one.
Mm.
Yeah.
Sick title.
I think the titles are Peril at End House, which is also a good title.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Yeah. I like his books a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
When I read about people who talk about Agatha Christie or listen to Agatha Christie podcasts, it does seem like people like one or the other a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And I'm a little bit more of a Poirot guy.
And what is your favorite standalone?
Well, I don't love a lot of the go-to classics as much. And Then There Were None, though, is like undeniably great. Like it's probably her most famous book, and that's a standalone, and it's incredible.
Okay.
And then there's one called Crooked House, which is fantastic. Really dark, pretty disturbing.
Ooh, maybe I should read that one.
Yeah, Crooked House is really good. It's messed up, and it has a good, it's good.
So I had read The Murder of Roger Ackroyd, and I, to be honest, like, I want to be as into these books as you are because, just what fun. You know, I feel that way about Stephen King and read every Stephen King book, and I think you do too, but like, I would love to have somebody else like that, and Agatha Christie has so many books. It was really kind of boring, and then, I kind of had guessed that ending only because I knew it couldn't have been anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And your takeaway was really, it kind of made me understand why you loved it a little bit more. And I don't want to like give any spoilers away, but at the same time, I guess I wanted to hear you talk about why that book is like so important or like so was so groundbreaking.
Yeah. Well, I'll also say first, like, I don't know if she is for everybody, just in terms of like, I am obsessed with like whodunits and mysteries.
Yeah.
Like, I do think she's a good writer, and I think she writes good prose, and I think she develops her characters well. But even if she didn't, I don't know. Ever since I was a little kid, my head has been sort of obsessed with like solving mysteries and solving puzzles.
Her mysteries and, like, are really good.
Her mysteries are incredible.
Yeah.
Like, she did it over 60 times, and like, there's a book about her called like The Talent to Deceive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about like how often she was able to trip up readers over and over and over again, sometimes by doing the same thing and like thinking she wasn't going to do it again, but then she kind of does it again, but does it in a slightly different way. So like
she had tricks that she would use.
She had it, unbelievable. And the other thing about her, and I have gone back, I read the Murder of Roger Ackroyd twice. I read Death on the Nile twice. The thing that everybody says about her, and I think I agree, is that like she always plays fairly. Like there's no like deus ex machina at the end where like something shows up that shouldn't be there.
Totally.
If you reread The Murder of Roger Ackroyd, like the twist that she pulls, she backs all of it up. Like there's something about, I don't know, to me, there's something about like dropping a hint on page 20 and then dropping a hint on page 70 and then dropping a hint on page 115.
Right.
And like having to pay attention to them and how they all loop up.
I see. So, yeah. Had I not seen that trick from the Murder of Roger Ackroyd before, I wouldn't have guessed it, and I would have been like, holy shit. But I also wouldn't have picked up on those things early on.
And I think the thing about that book in particular, and I guess it's kind of hard to talk about it without giving it away. This is kind of giving it away. But think about how that book ends.
Mm-hmm.
And think about, this is like a funny comparison, think about The Usual Suspects.
Yeah.
Remember how blown away everybody was at the end of The Usual Suspects?
Yeah.
It's the exact same trick, right? Like, and it was, you know, almost 100 years earlier.
Yeah.
Mind-blowing. It kind of is. Like, and so when she wrote that, this is entirely true. She was in like a detective writers club and they temporarily kicked her out of the club because of how like provocative and groundbreaking the ending of that was.
What?
Yeah. And they said,
she was
you're not
too good for the club.
She was too, literally, in my opinion, way too good.
Right.
Like they basically said, you're not playing by the rules. And then people went back and read the book and they were like, she did this. And I don't, I'm not enough of a scholar to say this with certainty, because I don't know if she invented it, but like, I don't know if there's a better earlier example of like the unreliable narrator mm-hmm. like, which is obviously like such a thing in literature. Mm-hmm. And I think it's something, think of like Gone Girl and like the
totally
like, I don't think that would be as big of a deal like in 2022, but in like the early 1900s to have a narrator doing that, mm-hmm. it just kind of like, I,
yeah, it's major.
Again, like, I That's... think about, like, seeing The Usual Suspects and on the yeah. car ride home being like, oh, what, oh, like, yeah. being blown away. Imagine, like, 1926
reading, like,
reading that book and being like, whoa, like, I can't believe she. So
do you feel that way after you read all of her books or most of them your favorite ones? Are
yeah.
you like, holy shit?
Yeah. The other thing she does a lot is there'll be, like, a false ending.
Uh-huh.
So, like, with 7 pages left.
Yeah.
You think you got it right when, like, she announces who the murderer is, and then she pulls the rug out a second time, and then it's like, there's, like, a second sort of yeah. reveal. So the other thing that she did, and I think she did this intentionally, is, like, she would put out 2 or 3 books in a row that were great and had, like, surprise endings, and but they were relatively straightforward, where there were, like, 8 suspects, and you had to kind of figure out who it was, and mm-hmm. All the clues were there, and then she would have a reveal. But, like, a lot of her most famous books, like The Murder of Roger Ackroyd, Murder on the Orient Express, The ABC Murders, it's sort of this ironic thing where the books that are probably the most well-known are the ones that have the most over-the-top endings. I think I can spoil, like, Murder on the Orient Express. Like, the ending in that is that they're all the murderers.
Right.
You know, which is, like, that's pretty sick, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, it's and, fucking awesome. I love you know? That movie.
So she would kind of lay out a few kind of straightforward endings that were mm-hmm. still good, but like, and then she'd have something like that. ABC Murders, again, so early, was like a serial killer who wasn't really a serial killer.
Mm.
Like, she did that really early, and that had kind of an unusual ending. She was really good at maybe like every 4 or 5 books really subverting the genre, and it would always kind of keep you on your toes.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Wait, why do you think that she invented criminal profiling? Like, does Poirot do that?
Yeah, there are 2 types of criminal profiling, like mm-hmm. inductive and deductive criminal profiling. The inductive model is kind of like the classic, like, FBI profiling approach. Miss Marple more or less uses an inductive approach
mm-hmm.
where she tries to identify who a likely suspect would be based on characteristics of other people that she's known.
Right.
So that's the whole thing with Miss Marple, is she's an old spinster who lives in a little English village,
uh-huh.
but she's always paying close attention to everybody.
Yeah.
And by paying close attention to everybody, she kind of understands human psychology, and then she right. applies it when she solves crimes.
I love that, yeah.
Yeah, the original FBI model, they basically spent years interviewing serial killers to figure out, like, who is the type of person the most likely to commit this type of crime.
Right.
And all it does is kind of narrow down the field of suspects, right?
Right, because you said it's junk science.
That's the other thing, is, like, criminal profiling is not good science. And,
right.
like, it's been, like, propped up a lot over the years by the FBI and by mm-hmm. the kind of the original people who created it. And I think it's kind of continued to be propped up in, like, movies and TV as something mm-hmm. that it's super interesting.
Right.
And when it works, it's fascinating. But it's not... it's not actually that helpful.
Right.
There's a little bit more of, like, a more modern approach to criminal profiling called deductive criminal profiling, which argues that you have to take, like, every case on a case-by-case basis
mm-hmm.
to not make assumptions, to avoid tunnel vision, etc. And that's, like, pretty much what Poirot does.
Hmm.
So you've got like two different detectives, each using a different type of profiling. So profiling has kind of sustained its reputation, even though the science behind it is pretty lousy. Mm-hmm. And even though it's rarely effective in actually helping to solve cases. Mm-hmm. But I think profiling is popular because it's such a good way to weave a story.
Yeah.
Like if you read the Mindhunter book, there's a chapter in Mindhunter called The Killer Will Have a Speech Impediment, mm-hmm. about like a serial killer. And basically like John Douglas was like, when this guy is caught, he's going to have a speech impediment.
Wow.
And then he was caught and he had a speech impediment. And people were like, holy shit.
Right.
Like, okay. Which is awesome.
Yeah.
But that's not why they caught him. Right. Like it had nothing to do with catching him.
Right.
And obviously he's going to put that story in the book.
Right.
And not the dozens of times that they made predictions that like led to absolutely nothing.
Totally. Yeah.
So we like storytelling.
Yes.
And we like kind of a retrospective narrative of how things went.
Yeah.
So I think not only did Agatha Christie kind of set the stage for profiling, because they actually, Robert Ressler and John Douglas quoted her in early FBI paper. Yeah. So not only did she set the stage for it, I think like our obsession with storytelling and like having the right answer, I think that that's what's perpetuated criminal profiling, even though the science behind it is pretty wonky, and it's not a helpful way to actually solve crimes.
Well, my favorite part of like Death on the Nile, like when she goes back and retells it, putting the puzzle pieces in, mm-hmm. and it's so exciting.
It's so satisfying.
Yeah, it really is. Because it all checks out.
I think that's a good example of like the ending in that and the mystery. It's pretty straightforward. Like it's pretty, it's like, and in retrospect, it's like, oh, that makes sense. But
right.
She does such a good job.
And all the timing, it all worked out. Like the timing of it.
It's beautiful. Yeah. It's to think that she did that once a year for like 60 years in a row.
So fucking awesome.
And like just kept doing it over and over again. It's so, I think she is a lot like Stephen King in that like really prolific, mm-hmm. incredibly popular, like a genre writer who like, because they're good and popular, they don't get maybe the respect from like literary snobs in terms of like just how good they are.
Right. It's like they're not tortured. They're clearly like loving what they do.
Totally.
Which and it's is like, also very, I think that people don't give them credit, especially critics, because they're envious.
I don't know. You know, sometimes if you read something that's like beautifully written, you're like, holy shit, how'd they pull this off?
Yeah.
And then with her, it's just the fact that she pulls off the mystery almost every time. I'm like, how did she, I'm so fascinated by a brain that can,
that can do that. Maybe her writing style isn't exactly for me. Maybe it's like a little bit dated, but like so is Stephen King. Now, also the books that I read probably aren't as like hard. Like we love a lot of the same books, but some of them you've read like more difficult books that I'm like, sounds boring. Like Lonesome Dove.
Lonesome Dove. So it's long, but it's not difficult. It's pretty straightforward.
I guess difficulty isn't what I mean. Maybe it's just like trudging through.
Yeah, I do appreciate like trudging through. I like short books. I like that Agatha Christie books are, you know, 180 pages, knock them out in a day or two.
Yeah, some are longer than others. So I didn't finish and then there were none.
What?
I know, I'm going to. You know what happened was that I was listening to it.
Okay.
I was liking it. It was still like a little bit dry. I used to be like, I'm going to finish every book I read. And then
it's not worth it.
Stopped that rule because who gives a shit?
Right.
Talk to me about like what's your least favorite Agatha Christie book?
Well, she's got some really bad ones. Mm-hmm. Like I said, some of the thrillers are pretty bad. There's one called The Big Four. It's so bad. Like I finished it. I remember being kind of embarrassed that I was even reading it. Like I don't think she did a good job with like action adventure type stuff. Mm-hmm. When she moved away from that. I guess this is the case with any author from her time period. But the other like elephant in the room with Agatha Christie is like, you know, she gets a little anti-Semitic and a little racist once in a while in her books.
Right. Yeah.
And like definitely was like a very proud, like, colonialist, like, very into, like, English colonialism.
Weird.
And the Big Four is bad, and it involves, like, an international cabal where, uh-huh. like, all of the players are, like, racist stereotypes. So don't read the big. I think I only gave it one star on my dossier that I sent you.
Yeah.
That one's really bad. She definitely should have stuck to whodunits. Like, that's nobody was better. I definitely went through a phase when I was younger, like a pretentious phase, where like I thought like plot didn't matter. Mm-hmm. Like, remember that was like a I remember like reading about like. Like Don DeLillo talking about like plots overrated and Robert Altman saying he doesn't care about plot.
Right.
And I feel like that attitude is the sort of attitude that like diminishes somebody like Agatha Christie, mm-hmm. who the reason you read her is plot. You're not reading her for like the prose. You know how hard it is to write plot?
Like, oh my God, right.
I mean, I love Robert Altman and Don DeLillo, but I feel like Robert Altman's being a dick, being, you know, he's been dead for a while, so it's okay. But being like, I just think people are jealous that they can't write plot because I think writing plot is so, it's so hard.
Yeah.
And like,
I think it's really hard to do it well is the thing.
Yeah.
I think that Dom DeLillo. I haven't read anything by him just because his name's Dom. No, that's my stand up. I just don't, I'm not interested in reading like cultural studies. Is that what he writes? What does he write? He writes fiction?
He writes fiction.
Should I read it?
Don DeLillo?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. If you want to read a long, long-ass book, Underworld is incredible. Like,
okay.
No joke, Les, the first...
Forget everything I said about Dom DeLillo. Love him.
The first 80 pages of Underworld might be my favorite thing that's ever been written.
What?
Yep.
Bob, I don't... You always... You always say these like grand statements like that completely blow my mind.
I mean, the whole book is good. It's 800 pages and it doesn't have a plot. Like, but
are there other whodunit authors that you love?
Yes, but like,
do you ever read Sherlock Holmes? Sir Boyle.
I've read a bunch of like her contemporaries, and like they're sometimes good, but they're never as good. And like, so if you don't like Agatha Christie and you're hearing that, you're like, well, I'm definitely not going to read, you know, Dorothy Sayers or Naji Marsh or like the other, but like, and I like modern, I read some modern,
like who?
There's like a woman named Louise Penny who writes.
Oh
like
yeah. I've always
cozy.
Wanted to get into her. Yeah, yeah. That's what my friend Elizabeth said. It cozy. Do you ever read like Anthony Horowitz or like.
Yeah. Yeah. I read both of those.
Me too. I like them.
Me too. They both have tons of allusion to like Agatha. Like,
right.
I think Agatha Christie's grandson's in one of those books. Like, doesn't he show up?
Yeah, I think
like,
so.
It's just, she's so, I don't know if there's anybody more like closely associated with a genre.
Was
like
Murder, She Wrote based on Agatha Christie?
No, but it's like, it is Agatha Christie.
Yeah, like, why didn't her family sue?
I don't
Especially, she's public domain now.
Like her first like 10 books are like every
no way
year,
really
every because it's like whatever that 100-year thing is, so like every year a new Agatha Christie book goes into the public domain. You asked me earlier like how I got into her, and I was thinking about that the other day. There was like a Facts of Life episode.
Mm-hmm.
Did you watch Facts of Life?
Doy, of
Do
course I did.
Do you remember in the opening credits there's that scene where they're all grabbing brooms and like one of them grabs a loaf of bread and they're all like about to stab one another?
Yeah.
Okay.
I remember it with perfect clarity.
Okay. That episode is called Seven Little Indians. And the original title of And Then There Were None was 10 Little Indians.
Yes.
Right?
Mm.
And that episode is 100%. So like as a little kid, I was so obsessed with that episode of Facts of Life. Like I would like wait for it to come on, like as like in, because the idea of like who's the killer,
yeah,
just man, I obsessed, and then like yeah, when like the horror, when I started watching horror movies as a teenager, it's like I didn't even know that they were ripping off Agatha Christie.
Totally, I didn't know that either, and that's so awesome. I want to watch that episode of Facts of Life, but I also don't want it to spoil anything for And Then There Were None, which is such a better title, by the way, not to like, even if it was like 10 little Native Americans or like indigenous people, whatever. Like,
yeah.
And then There Were None is a sick title.
I implore you and your listeners to not look up what the original title was.
Oh my God.
Beyond problematic.
Yeah. So what, I know that you're writing this thing about Agatha Christie, but tell me something that you wish could be a hobby.
It's such a boring answer. But golf. I want to start playing golf more.
That's great. I love that answer.
I watch golf. I play fantasy golf. Vanessa got me a set of golf clubs last year, and I've only used them a couple of times. The problem with golf is like it's hard to be like to play by yourself.
Right.
Because if you show up, they put you with strangers. Like
Lame.
They put you in a duo or a foursome. And I don't have anybody up right. here that like is going to want to play golf with me. But I want to develop a hobby that's physical that I can do until I'm like 90.
Yes.
You know, like, and I want to start now because I, you know, I'm pretty active and I like being active, but
yeah.
I know gradually it's going to happen less and less.
Yeah.
So I'm looking for a hobby that's like intentionally planning ahead so that when I'm like 70, I can like still go out and like hit some golf balls.
Did you play sports in high school?
I mean, not on like real teams, but
right.
You used to come to my hockey games, remember?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I played soccer and hockey like a lot when I was younger. But I miss playing sports. And so I feel like golf is a good like compromise for like where I'm at age-wise right. to start playing.
Give me one that you know that you'll never get into, but like you kind of wish you could.
Like, a hobby?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got
to... I don't know, magic?
I'm pretty content with my hobbies.
Another hobby of yours is poker.
Yeah, well, I like gambling. You know what I would love to do? Mm. I love sports gambling. Mm. And I think I told you, I'm on a heater right now.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to take one football season and move to Las Vegas for 4 months and just see if I could like make it betting on football straight up.
Just
for one season for 4 months. Really do my research,
mm-hmm.
really like everybody that gambles thinks they're good at it.
Right.
And like, I'm not dumb. Like I know the hot streak that I'm on now is not going to last forever.
Right.
But I would love to be able to commit 4 months of only paying attention to betting on football. Like living out of a hotel.
Oh my God. I love you so much.
I love you so much. Thank you so much for letting me do this. This is the most I've ever talked about Agatha Christie. It was probably obvious that everything I said to you has been like floating around in my head for 20 years.
Great.
And you gave me a platform to let it all out.
I'm so glad I was able to do that.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
If you liked our show, please subscribe, rate, review, and tell a friend. Filling the Void is a production of the Irios Network. Episodes are produced, engineered, and edited by Alex Paul. Original song by Michael Cassidy.
Powered by Acast.
Irios.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.